Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, November 14th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, City looks at increasing screening lanes at the Midland Airport. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. City leaders will decide Tuesday on spending nearly $3 million for an agreement with Park Hill to provide the design phase of the Terminal Modernization and Checkpoint Relocation Project at Midland International Airport. The city reports that Midland International has, quote, experienced considerable growth in passenger enplanements in the last 2 years, including record enplanements in fiscal year 2023. Due to the increase in enplanements, the Transportation Security Agency has requested that MAF provide a passenger screening / checkpoint area that can accommodate 3 screening lanes, increasing the number of lanes from the existing 2, the city reported. Park Hill has completed a planning and concept review of the existing terminal to evaluate solutions to increasing the passenger screening / checkpoint to accommodate the new TSA criteria for 3 screening lanes, the city reported. Based on meetings between the airport staff and Park Hill, the solution identified was to expand the lobby level of the terminal to the south and relocate the passenger screening / checkpoint area to the lobby level, just south of airline ticketing, the city stated in an agenda packet document. Upon clearing the screening area on the lobby level, passengers would then access the upper concourse level using escalators and an elevator. This configuration would allow passenger queuing prior to entering the screening / checkpoint area to be located on the lobby level of the terminal, eliminating the potential for passengers backing up on the escalators in the queuing lanes. The city noted the new TSA screening area will be sized to allow future expansion to 4 screening lanes. The existing passenger screening / checkpoint area will be modified to be passenger exit only from the concourse level. The city also noted that part of the modernization project calls for the replacement of 36-year-old boilers, building heating, 24-year-old chillers, building cooling, and existing non-LED light fixtures with modern LED light fixtures. Initially, the funding for the design will be 100% airport funds. However, MAS has submitted an Airport Terminal Program, ATP, grant application for funding a portion of the design / bidding phase, the city reported. If awarded, the amount of the grant for Midland International would be 95% of the design / bidding phase. It is anticipated that the FAA will determine if MAF will receive an ATP grant and the amount of the grant in February 2024. Airfield Snow Removal Vehicles and Equipment Acquisition Project. The same agenda item calls for the funding for the Airfield Snow Removal Vehicles and Equipment Acquisition Project for $65,000. MAF's current snow and ice control vehicles and equipment are of the age that the equipment is beyond its useful life, and obtaining parts has become an issue, the city reported. In addition to the age of the equipment, the FAA recently issued new and updated requirements for the snow and ice removal equipment that requires changes in the capabilities of the equipment to remove snow in the required amount of time. This project will acquire snow removal vehicles and the associated equipment to meet the FAA requirements of the airport's snow and ice control plan. New furniture at Midland International. The Council will vote on the purchase of furniture and associated equipment for Midland International Airport from So Company, Inc. Also does business as Office-Wise Furniture and Equipment, for a total cost of $203,927.33. The furniture in the administration area of the terminal is 25 years old and needs to be replaced. This purchase will replace the furniture in the airport administration lobby, media/conference room, and some of the chairs in the Airport Operations Control Center, airport police, and individual offices, the city reported. The Midland City Council is scheduled to meet at 10 a.m. Tuesday inside Council Chamber at Midland City Hall. This article is entitled, City Records One of Best Sales Tax Months in History, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Sales tax collection inside the city of Midland rebounded from its first monthly decline in nearly 2 years. The City of Midland reported November was one of the top sales tax collections of any month in city history. The city showed a collection of $6.104 million, which was an 11.83% increase compared to November 2022, and the fifth largest collection in the city's history, according to Reporter Telegram records. The increased November collection, a record for the month, means the city is showing a 4.38% increase through the second month of the current fiscal year. The city also reported November sales tax revenue was $565,316 higher than the monthly budget, which brings the city year-to-date actuals over budget by $630,676. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax income from 2 months prior to collection. November's collection is based on September sales. The City of Midland collects a full cent of the 8.25% of sales tax inside the City of Midland. This article is entitled, GOP Sheriff DA Candidates Begin Filing for Primary, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Seven Midland County Republicans filed for the primary contests of 2024 on the first day of the filing period. Candidates filed for two higher-profile races, specifically sheriff and district attorney. Sheriff David Kreiner and Justin Painter put their names on the March 5th primary ballot. Rory McKinney also has announced his intention to run for sheriff. Glenn Harwood followed up on his commitment to run for district attorney, and David Rogers filed to run for re-election for the judge of the 142nd District Court. Other Republicans to file were Jamie Hall, Precinct 4 Constable, Douglas Brown, Precinct 2 Constable, and Mary Helen Bowers, Tax Assessor/Collector. The filing period continues through December 11th. This article is entitled, Midland County Sales Tax Collection Approaches $77 Million, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Midland County blew away its previous yearly sales tax record. The county reported collecting $76.894 million during the 2023 fiscal year. That total demolished the county forecast by nearly $34 million, 78.8%, and topped the yearly record set in 2019, $63.324 million, by 21.4%. The county reported $62.65 million in sales tax collected in fiscal year 2022. The county has beat its sales tax record forecast by $59.5 million over the last two fiscal years. Typically, money greater than the amount forecast goes into the county's savings account. Midland County Judge Terry Johnson previously told the Reporter-Telegram that Midland County uses trend analysis information to plan for the dollars we feel we will receive on an annual basis. While it is not the intent of the county to underestimate revenues, county officials are charged with budgeting sales tax revenue dollars 6 to 9 months before final numbers are available. If revenues are overestimated, we run the risk of spending dollars which are not available to the county. The two-year sales tax jump is reminiscent to the last decade, when county officials saw sales tax collections easily top forecasts by $10 million or more, including a nearly $30 million surplus in 2018 and more than $20 million in 2019. Johnson added, the previous 12-month collections, less a conservative 20%, has been a rule of thumb. County leaders have approved a budget for fiscal year 2024 with a sales tax forecast of $60 million. With sales tax being responsible for approximately half of the county's operating budget, the fact that it can change dramatically and quickly necessitates a calculation that protects the integrity of the budget process, Johnson wrote. With sales tax being a volatile number, we find it better to prepare for the worst while hoping for the best. It's much easier to make plans with less money and readjust when it's found out that there's more, versus making plans and then having to readjust those plans to be within the means of less income. The county has surpassed its forecast in 11 of the last 12 years. This article is entitled MISD Board to Look at $4 Million Plus Dollars in Tutoring Programs, Panic Alert Tech, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Midland ISD board members will go through their own cost of doing business session at their regular meeting Tuesday at Bowie Fine Arts Academy. The board will have the opportunity to improve $7.788 million in budgeted and requested purchases, including three that top $1 million. Those million-dollar items include FEV Tutor Program, that for $2.267 million will create a collaborative partnership with Midland ISD to drive immediate and long-term impact for elementary, middle, and high school students currently below proficiency in reading, as measured by the 2023 STAR assessments. FEV Tutor Program that for $1.853 million will create a collaborative partnership with Midland ISD to drive immediate and long-term impact for elementary, middle, and high school students currently below proficiency in mathematics, as measured by the 2023 STAR assessments. The requested item over $1 million is $2.02 million ask for wearable silent panic alert technology, is designed to improve communication with first responders. Features include wearable, discrete, one-button connections to diverse emergency services technologies, real-time coordination among multiple first responder agencies, including county, local, and on-site responders, and integration with local public safety answering points to transmit on calls and mobile activations. This will be a one-time cost for a five-year term, according to the district. Another teaching and learning department item is $712,500 for an Imagine Learning program, is used for personalized learning for all pre-K-3 and K-2 emergent bilingual students. Not only does this program allow for intervention for students to fill any learning gaps, but it also allows for the opportunity for enrichment for students who have mastered grade-level standards, the district reported. Additionally, MISD will utilize Imagine Math Facts to help support grade-level math mastery. This is the final year of the contract and is a budgeted expense. Other purchases include renovation of the Family Support Center for $260,259, furniture for Milam Elementary for $225,396, redesign and installation of an irrigation system at Scarborough Elementary for $115,679, the first for MISD Elementaries and the standard moving forward, according to MISD. $119,423 for the purchase of 1,043 Cisco phones for use in elementary classrooms, and $214,442 for a cabling project. Midland ISD will meet at 5:30 p.m. Tuesday at Bowie Fine Arts Academy. This article is entitled, Report, Plane from Midland Makes Emergency Landing in McKinney, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. A small plane that made an emergency landing in McKinney on Saturday had taken off in Midland, according to a report from the McKinney Courier-Gazette. The McKinney newspaper reported that a small aircraft flight originated in Midland and made an emergency landing at the Arrow County Airport in McKinney. The pilot was unable to stop at the end of the runway, and the plane went through a fence and on to eastbound Virginia Parkway, the report said. It collided with a car that was driving by. The flight website www.flightaware.com reported Saturday that a Lancair PropJet 4, single turboprop, owned by OJOS Aviation, left Midland Air Park at 11:14 a.m. and arrived at Arrow County at 12:29 p.m. The Courier-Gazette reported the McKinney Fire Department responded to an Alert 3 call for a plane crash at 12:30 p.m. McKinney Fire Department paramedics evaluated three patients at the scene, according to the Courier-Gazette, including two from the plane. This column is called Small Bites. It is entitled Far West Coffee Expanding Downtown, by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. The local coffee crew at Far West Coffee announced via Instagram an expansion into downtown. The post said Far West partnered with Permian Resources, oil and gas company, to make the new location happen at the Permian Resources headquarters on Marionfield Street. The shop opens sometime in 2024. Far West Coffee opened a brick and mortar in 2020 after raising funds through the community. Founded by Olaf Luna and Christopher Benninghoff, Far West Coffee started as a frequent and beloved pop-up at farmers markets and events. Now, at its Cuthbert Avenue location, Far West offers specialty coffees, teas, and pastries, while emphasizing the importance of community. The shop regularly holds art shows, pop-ups, and other events. Far West Coffee is open from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday at 2040 West Cuthbert Avenue. This article is entitled USGS Shows Sunday Afternoon Quake Near Stanton, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. A 3.4 magnitude earthquake was reported Sunday afternoon around 13.6 miles from Stanton, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. The USGS reported the quake took place at 5:21 p.m. and happened at a depth of 5.6 miles. The quake was the second in 2 days, and the third since Tuesday around Stanton, according to EarthquakeTrack.com. The website on Sunday evening also showed 20 quakes in and around Midland, Stanton, Big Spring, and Garden City in the previous 30 days. 20 is the same number that had taken place in Far West Texas in the last 24 hours during the same period. EarthquakeTrack.com showed Sunday night the seismic activity included 251 quakes around Mentone in the past 7 days, and 460 in the past 30 days. This column is called Opinion. It is entitled, Midlanders Must Lead on Education, by Tim Dunn, guest columnist. I love Midland and Midlanders. I have great confidence in Midland voters and fully support their decisions, including passage of the recent school bond. Their collective wisdom has consistently guided Midland in a positive direction during the decades I have had the privilege to live here. Now that the school facility question is resolved, we have a great opportunity to unite around shared principles. We care about kids and families and want our community to be great. A primary reason I have never engaged in leading any of the various state-level education reform initiatives is that while state-level policy is important, local leadership has a much greater impact on student outcomes. Academic studies and life experience make clear that what matters most in helping parents gain educational progress for their children is good campus leadership, excellent classroom teachers, and diligence in training students in basic building blocks of learning. For the past 25 years, I have focused my educational efforts toward helping start and grow an affordable, nonprofit private school in Midland. It serves a particular market segment, specifically engaged parents who desire their children to become servant leaders. There is now a rising consensus that if Midland is to be an oasis rather than a duty station for families, then our tax-funded schools must be excellent. This is a good development, and we should all be eager to see many local leaders emerge to produce this result. The statewide educational establishment positions me as the villain in their political theater to divert attention from sagging performance. Although I have never led efforts for, quote, school choice, unquote, or even made public statements on the topic, media falsely claims I am the movement's leader. It has become an inside joke that the media focus has been on someone who is basically uninvolved in the school choice movement. As the current series of special sessions demonstrates, those who are actually leading the school choice movement have made huge strides. Participating media uses the tenuous argument that I have been a significant donor to various Republican candidates that cite support of school choice as part of their many policy positions. By that standard, the leader of the school choice movement would be Governor Abbott's top donor, since the governor just called a fourth special session to pass a school choice bill. In reality, Governor Abbott is currently the actual leader for school choice. But the relevant reality is that none of what is being proposed in Austin will have much, if any, impact on how MISD is led. Raising MISD to excellence is up to us, the engaged Midland community. And we must unite around shared principles rather than succumb to distractions such as false narratives and political theater. Here are some things Midlanders can unite around in order to make Midland schools great. MISD should put students and families first. Putting students and families first means that if schools achieve superior student outcomes, those programs should be supported and expanded. IDEA Charter Schools turned Travis Elementary from an F-rated school to a school with a long waiting list of applicants. It accomplished this in just 3 years, while retaining 80% of the children who attended prior to the takeover. It seems we would all agree that MISD should be looking to rapidly expand what is working to every school in need. Advancing student welfare should be MISD's top priority. Putting students and families first requires MISD to enforce its student discipline policy. This is necessary to establish order in MISD classrooms. It puts teachers first, too. When teachers have a discipline problem, they need support from their administration. Problems need to be solved, not dumped back into teachers' laps. Allowing disruptive classroom behavior robs teachers and students of the environment they need to teach and learn. It should not be a consideration whether MISD loses state funding based on attendance when students migrate to public charter schools like IDEA, or when students are removed for violations of discipline policies. Student welfare should matter more than money or other institutional self-interests. MISD should be respectful of and partner with Midland citizens and voters. The district should make its financial dealings transparent and then be proud of every expenditure. We should support and monitor MISD's initiative to set up an oversight committee to track bond expenditures. We should support the committee working alongside the district to ensure good stewardship of the funds entrusted from the recent bond election. MISD should be courageous. We should also support a culture change at MISD similar to changes being pursued by the City of Midland. The city has been working in recent months toward a goal of becoming the most customer-friendly city in Texas. The city's initial progress can be seen with their new one-stop shop for permits, and by changes to the city website, where our slogan shifted from "Feel the Energy" to "Be the Energy." That small change indicates action rather than passivity. We should all help MISD become an organization that develops deep local trust based on a record of service to the community. When I have asked why are school districts refusing to enforce discipline, the only plausible answer I have received is they fear being sued. Such fear must not be a primary factor driving MISD culture. If someone sues, the entire community must be willing to fight for the needs of teachers and kids to have a great learning environment. MISD should be willing to swim against the tide. Unions and state associations appear to be advancing the wrong culture. They are powerful political forces, but we must work together to not allow a worldview that views students merely as revenue generators. The Permian Basin's economic activity spreads bounty to communities around the world. Our local government entities can also advance human flourishing on multiple fronts. Let's work together to ensure that MISD does what it takes to accomplish what Midlanders desire, which is to build a first-class educational system that puts students and parents first. This is the Life Tributes column. Janet Fry Stoltz, July 14, 1930 to November 8, 2023. Janet Fry Stoltz passed away peacefully on November 8th in Dallas. A visitation will be held in Midland on Tuesday, November 14th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Nally Pickelin Wells Funeral Home. A private family burial will be held at a later time. Janet was born on July 14, 1930, in Evanston, Illinois, to Russell and Gracia Fry. Janet and Dean Stoltz married on October 6, 1951. They moved to Midland in 1955 to pursue the oil business, where they loved the friendly and civic-minded community and had a large circle of friends. She is preceded in death by her husband, Dean, and her daughter, Susan Teary. She is survived by her son, Gary Stoltz, and wife, Pam, and her daughters, Candy Stoltz and Julie Noreen, and husband, Charlie. She is also survived by 9 grandchildren and 9 great-grandchildren. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the charity of your choice. Michelle Annette Sherman, June 8, 1973 to October 31, 2023. Michelle Annette Sherman, 50, of Midland, passed away on October 31. She was born on June 8, 1973. Michelle is survived by her mother, Sharon Haggard, daughter Christine Schoonover, and spouse Cameron Schoonover, Daniel Liebert Schoonover, Atria Sebastian Schoonover, Theolonius James Schoonover, sister Sherry Kuntz, spouse of Sherry Kuntz, Lance Kuntz, someone Michelle looked at like a brother. Michelle was preceded in death by Carlton Fisher, father, J.R. Haggard, father, Daniel Schoonover, grandson, Johnny Shearman, husband, and her grandparents Roy French and Lois French. In her career, Michelle worked as a certified nursing assistant. She dedicated her time to caring for others. A celebration of life will be held November 18th at 2 o'clock at Circle J Cowboy Church. The service will be provided over by Eric Kuntz. In lieu of flowers, contributions may be made to a charitable organization of your choice. Abraham Herman Rudnick, March 29, 1930 to November 8, 2023. Abraham Herman Rudnick, 93, of Midland, passed away on November 8. He is survived by his children, Isidore L. Rudnick, Leah A. Rudnick Granados, Tomas Granados, and Neil O. Rudnick, as well as 4 grandchildren. A private memorial service is being held in Midland. Shay Jordan Sykes, May 16, 2005 to November 12, 2023. Shay Jordan Sykes, 18, of Midland, passed away November 12th. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 15th at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, November 16th at First Christian Church in Midland. Shay was born on May 16, 2005 in Midland to Dr. Stephen Sykes and Cindy Contreras. Shay is survived by his father, Dr. Stephen Sykes, his mother, Cindy Contreras, his brothers Rowan and Remy Tercero, his maternal grandparents Amanda and Arcelia Contreras, his great-grandparents Jimmy Contreras and Anastasio Gamboa, as well as many aunts, uncles, and cousins. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Aristo Alonzo Jr. Aristo Alonzo Jr., age 47, of Midland, went to be with the Lord on November 11th. Visitation will be held November 15th at 10 a.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. November 15th at the chapel. A funeral mass will be held November 16th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church. Interment will follow immediately at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences can be made at asanchestfh.com. Cesar Cifuentes Mendoza. Cesar Cifuentes Mendoza, 51, passed away November 11th. Visitation was held Monday, November 13th from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Burial will be held in his hometown of Castanos, Mexico. Online condolences can be made at www.asanchestfh.com. Wilma Wanda Moore. Wilma Wanda Moore, 90, of Garden City, passed away November 12th. The family will receive friends from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, November 16th at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Graveside services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, November 17th at the Garden City Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, November 14th. Board to consider amending Nacero Agreement. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will hold a public hearing Tuesday on an amendment to an agreement for a limitation on appraised value between itself and Nacero Texas LLC. The Texas Comptroller's website said an appraised value limitation is an agreement in which a taxpayer agrees to build or install property and create jobs in exchange for a 10-year limitation on the taxable property value for school district maintenance and operations tax M&O purposes. According to its website, Nacero's Penwell facility will convert billions of British thermal units, BTUs, of renewable natural gas and associated gas from the Permian into over 1 billion gallons of SAF, sustainable aviation fuel, LCAF, lower carbon aviation fuel, and other light products annually, using captured biogas feedstock, integrated carbon capture, and 100% renewable power will result in millions of tons of CO2 savings annually while creating thousands of clean energy jobs and adding a forecast $20 billion to the regional economy. The plant has an estimated cost of $7 to $10 billion. Supplemental ECISD agenda material says the Nacero project now has been designated as a clean energy project, which allows it to add 3 more years to its qualifying time period. Amendment number 2 delayed the start of the limitation period, which created 3 gap years following the end of the qualifying time period, i.e. 2024, 2025, and 2026. With the new designation as a clean energy project, the material says, these gap years can be part of the qualifying time period, provide additional time for Nacero to make the minimum $100 million qualified investment, and therefore keep the agreement from terminating at the end of this year due to lack of investment. Nacero was not able to get delivery of certain equipment and could not begin construction due to issues arising from the pandemic, the material detailed. The original application noted 258 new qualifying jobs would be created, but they can meet the minimum requirement with only 25 new qualifying jobs. Therefore, the company is seeking to amend the number of new qualifying jobs and new non-qualifying jobs to 25 and 0, respectively. Nacero still intends to have the same number of employees as originally planned, but not reaching the designated number of qualifying jobs could cause significant penalties and perhaps even cause the amendment to be terminated by the comptroller. To be safe, Nacero is asking to reduce the number of qualifying jobs to the statutory minimum. This practice is not uncommon among other applicants and is approved by the comptroller. Since the findings of fact addressed the number of jobs when the original agreement was approved, the board must approve the reduction by amending the resolution and findings of fact, the material stated. Trustees can also canvass results of the November 7th bond election. One of 3 propositions passed, the bond amount, which all the propositions was $436,109,000. Proposition A for $424,263,000 passed with 56.83% or 5,557 votes for to 47.17% or 422 votes against. It includes a new career and technical education center in South Odessa, a new middle school in West Odessa, district-wide maintenance and repairs, bus purchases, and a new transportation facility, replacement of district phone system, PA, bell, clock, fire alarm system replacements, a security camera refresh, classroom interactive flat panels, and large group instruction area audiovisual equipment. Also, a complete renovation of the Permian High School auditorium, replacing outdated instruments, performance risers for all middle school choirs, classroom instruments for elementary campuses, uniforms for middle school bands and mariachi, JROTC facility needs. Complete replacement of the transition learning facility for students with special needs learning to transition from school to the workforce. Complete replacement of classroom buildings and barns at the agricultural farm. Additionally, LED lighting at the Odessa High School baseball and tennis stadiums, LED lighting at the Permian High School baseball stadium, resurfacing of tennis stadiums at all middle schools, replacement of indoor bleachers in main gyms of all middle schools, and purchasing land for a new middle school or on South Tripp Avenue. Land for the new CTE Center was donated to ECISD by Grow Odessa. The Permian Strategic Partnership also has pledged to give monetary support to the CTE Center. Proposition B for $8,096,000 at Ratliff Stadium failed, with 52.06% or 5,072 votes against and 47.94% or 4,670 supporting the prop. It included concrete overlay of bleachers, update restrooms, LED lighting for stadium parking lot, LED lighting at track and field event venue, air conditioning, heating for south building locker rooms, replace one grass field with artificial turf, also includes any major maintenance needs at the stadium complex identified in facilities assessment report. Proposition C for $3,750,000 failed with 54.13% or 5,269 voters voting against it, and 45.87% or 4,465 voting for it. It included a new indoor practice facility for Odessa High School, new artificial turf for existing indoor practice facility at Permian High School. According to the law, these indoor practice facilities must be separate bond proposals for voters to consider. In other business, the board will consider a request for approval of a resolution to designate additional non-business days under the Texas Public Information Act for 2023. House Bill 3033 enacted changes in the way Texas governmental entities define business days in regard to calculations, deadlines for Texas Public Information Act, TPIA requests. The update law allows the Board of Trustees to designate up to 10 additional days in each calendar year when a district's administrative offices are closed or operating with minimal staff that may be used in calculating deadlines. Trustees must officially designate these days on an annual basis through a resolution or other official board action. Hear the annual financial report. Consider Ector County Appraisal District Board members. Request for approval to submit a grant to the Office of the Governor for ALERT, Advanced Law Enforcement Rapid Response Training for ECISD Peace Officers. keep risky habits out of the kitchen this Thanksgiving. America's biggest food holiday is almost here, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, wants to remind consumers to avoid habits that increase the risk of harmful bacteria in their Thanksgiving meal. Unsafe handling and undercooking your turkey can cause foodborne illness, said USDA Undersecretary for Food Safety, Dr. Emilio Esteban, in a news release. To ensure your Thanksgiving meal is wholesome and memorable without the illness, follow the four-step to food safety: clean, separate, cook and chill, and avoid risky food handling habits that go against USDA guidelines. Here are seven dangerous habits USDA would like consumers to drop. Number one, not washing your hands or kitchen surfaces before, during, and after food prep. Hand washing is the first step to avoiding foodborne illness. Wash your hands for at least 20 seconds with soap and water before, during, and after handling food. Clean and sanitize any surfaces that have touched raw turkey and its juices and will later touch food, such as kitchen counters, sinks, stoves, tabletops, etc. Cleaning with soap and water physically removes the germs, and sanitizing kills any remaining. Many different sanitizers can be used. An easy homemade version is to make a solution of 1 tablespoon of liquid chlorine bleach per gallon of water, or you can use a commercial sanitizer or sanitizing wipe. Thorough hand washing remains a concern for the USDA. The most recent USDA study shows that 87% of participants self-reported they washed their hands before cooking, starting to cook in the kitchen. However, only 44% of participants were observed doing so before meal preparation. Additionally, hand washing was not attempted 83% of the time when it should have been done after handling raw meat or touching contaminated surfaces. Throughout the study, 96% of hand washing attempts did not contain all necessary steps. Number two, using the same cutting board and utensils for raw and ready-to-eat food. Cross-contamination is the spread of bacteria from raw meat and poultry onto ready-to-cook food, surfaces, and utensils. Avoid this by using separate cutting boards, one for raw meat and poultry, and another for ready-to-eat foods like fruits and vegetables that will be served raw. Defrosting your turkey on the kitchen counter, leaving any frozen package of meat or poultry for more than 2 hours on the counter at room temperature is dangerous. Even though the center of the package may still be frozen, the outer layer of the food is in the danger zone between 40 and 140 degrees Fahrenheit, a temperature where foodborne bacteria multiply rapidly. You can safely thaw a turkey using the following methods. Refrigerator thawing. When thawing in a fridge, allow roughly 24 hours for every 4 to 6 pounds of turkey. After thawing, a turkey is safe in a refrigerator for 1 or 2 days. Cold water thawing. When thawing in a cold water bath, allow 30 minutes per pound and submerge the turkey in its original wrapping to avoid cross-contamination. Change the water every half hour until the turkey is thawed. Cook it immediately after thawing. Number four, cooking your turkey overnight at a low temperature. It is not safe to cook any meat or poultry in an oven set lower than 325 degrees. At lower temperatures, meat stays in the danger zone for too long. Cook your turkey at 325 degrees Fahrenheit or above and ensure all parts of the turkey reach a safe internal temperature of 165 degrees Fahrenheit. Number five, relying only on a pop-up temperature indicator. While the pop-up timers found in many turkeys tend to remain fairly accurate, they only check the internal temperature in one spot when we recommend three. Always use a food thermometer to ensure your turkey has reached a safe internal temperature of 165 degrees Fahrenheit in the thickest part of the breast, the innermost part of the wing, and the innermost part of the thigh to check its internal temperature. Number 6, stuffing your turkey the night before. USDA recommends against stuffing your turkey since this often leads to bacteria growth. If you plan to stuff your turkey, follow these steps. Prepare the wet and dry ingredients for the stuffing separately from each other and refrigerate until ready to use. Mixing the dry and wet ingredients produce an environment that bacteria can thrive in hours before being placed in the oven. Mix wet and dry ingredients just before filling the cavity of the turkey. Stuff the turkey loosely, about half, 3/4 cup per stuffing per pound. Never stuff a whole turkey and store in the refrigerator before cooking. Immediately place the stuffed raw turkey in an oven set no lower than 325 degrees Fahrenheit. A stuffed turkey will take 50% longer to cook. Once it has finished cooking, place a food thermometer in the center of the stuffing to ensure it has reached a safe internal temperature of 160 degrees Fahrenheit. Number 7. Keeping leftovers for more than a week. Store leftovers in a small, shallow container and put them in the refrigerator. Thanksgiving leftovers are safe to eat for up to 4 days when stored in the refrigerator. In the freezer, leftovers are safely frozen indefinitely, but will keep the best quality for 2 to 6 months. For more food safety information, call the USDA Meat and Poultry Hotline at 1-888-MP-HOTLINE, 1-888-674-6854, email mphotline@usda.gov, or chat live at ask.usda.gov from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. On Thanksgiving Day, the hotline will be open from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Volunteers urgently needed to support the Salvation Army's Christmas initiatives. While some may think it is still a little early to unpack the holiday decorations, the Salvation Army has been hard at work planning Christmas programs for several months. Now, as the red kettles are appearing outside stores and angel trees are being set up, volunteers are needed to help ensure men and women and children in need throughout our community experience the joys of Christmas. The Salvation Army of Odessa is seeking volunteers for its Red Kettle Campaign and Angel Tree Program. Captain Justin Vincent of the Salvation Army invites the community to get involved. Come spend some time volunteering and make a meaningful impact on the lives of countless individuals this holiday season. We have volunteer opportunities tailored just for you, whether you can spare an hour, a morning, or a full day, and come as an individual, family, or group, Vincent said in a news release. Become a bell ringer. Every dollar connected to the Red Kettle supports the Salvation Army Social Services Program throughout the year right here in Odessa. Bell ringer volunteer details. Dates, now through December 23rd, Monday through Saturday. How to volunteer. Visit registertoring.com and follow the prompts to sign up for the location and shift of your choice, or contact Captain Justin Vincent at 432-332-0738 or justin.vincent@uss.salvationarmy.org. Become an Angel Tree volunteer. Thanks to the generosity of local donors and businesses, the Salvation Army will provide gifts for 600 local children through the Angel Tree program. Volunteer activities include working at Angel Tree adoption locations, sorting gifts, and participating in the gift distribution day for registered families. In addition, churches and businesses can host an Angel Tree to bring joy and cheer to children in the community. Angel Tree volunteer details. Dates, now through December 18th. How to volunteer. Contact Captain Stephanie Vincent at 432-332-0738 or stephanie.vincent@uss.salvationarmy.org. If you are interested in volunteering to ring the bell or supporting the Angel Tree program, call the Salvation Army at 432-332-0738. Visit 810 East 11th Street, or go to the Salvation Army, odessa.org. Harmony received straight A's from TEA in latest First Financial Accountability Rating. All 7 Harmony Public Schools districts received superior A-plus scores from the Texas Educational Agency on the agency's annual First Financial Accountability Ratings, the TEA announced. Created by the 77th Texas Legislature in 2001, the School Financial Integrity Rating System of Texas, FIRST, is designed to encourage public schools to better manage their financial resources to provide the maximum allocation possible for direct instructional purposes. The FIRST ratings are calculated using 15 financial indicators, such as administrative cost expenditures, the accuracy of a district or charter's financial information submitted to TEA, and any financial vulnerabilities or material weaknesses in internal controls as determined by an external auditor, a news release said. Harmony's district-by-district scores are Harmony Public Schools Central Texas, 98. Harmony Public Schools Houston North, 100. Harmony Public Schools Houston South, 98. Harmony Public Schools West Houston, 100. Harmony Public Schools North Texas, 96. Harmony Public Schools South Texas, 96. Harmony Public Schools West Texas, El Paso, Lubbock, Midland, Odessa, 100. To ensure effective, efficient, and ethical use of all public funds entrusted to us, Harmony practices a number of financial safeguards as part of its regular operations. Among these are regular independent financial audits from third-party accounting firms and regular participation in its purchasing process from the Texas Association of School Business Officials, TASBO. In spring 2023, Harmony made history by becoming the first Texas public charter school to win both TASBO's Award of Excellence in Financial Management and Award of Merit for Purchasing Operations.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.